Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Who has the right to get around on North Texas streets? While motor vehicles make up the lion's share of traffic in our area, rising fuel costs, concerns about climate change, and interest in physical fitness have inspired a growing number of us to get around on bikes. But while cycling may be good for the environment and great for cardiovascular health, it can be deadly. On Monday of this week, a 51-year-old man died at the scene of a Richardson crash after being hit by a pickup truck driven by a teenage boy who told police that early morning sun glare kept him from spotting the rider until it was too late. So, do bikes belong on area streets, and who is to blame when accidents happen? David Faraday is a golf analyst for CBS Sports and a former pro golfer himself. He is also an avid cyclist and still recovering from a serious accident he had several months ago when he was hit by a pickup truck along Park Lane in Dallas. He writes about that in an article called Crash Test Dummy that appears in the current issue of D Magazine. David, welcome to Think.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you, Chris. You know, there's a heavy emphasis on the word dummy there, I think.
Well, I take it that you have sort of an addictive personality. Can you talk about how you got into cycling?
Well, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. For years, I played with bad elbows toward the end of my career and, you know, took pain pills every day. And that, you know, just turned into a worse situation. And the alcoholism, I guess, is something that's, you know, the Irish curse. It's the thirst and a tremendous ability to consume vast quantities of alcohol and still remain upright and perfectly lucid. But, you know, it was something that I had to do something about. So I ended up, you know, going to meetings and trying to shake the problem that way. And I bought a bike and started to ride there. And one day, I rode a little further and I thought, you know, I really feel better about this. And I would take a longer route to the meeting and then a longer one. And one day I just kept riding. And that's how it happened.
So tell us about the morning that you got hit. It was before sunset, sunrise rather.
Just before sunrise, yeah. I tend to ride extremely early in the morning. One of the things about the alcoholism is that I didn't realize that I had a sleep problem. I don't sleep very well at all. Apparently I was in a coma for years. After two bottles of Bushmills a day. Yeah, that's really a great sleeping aid. But I'll be awake at 1-2 o'clock in the morning, and I had problems with depression, clinical depression. I was very seriously ill for a long time too, and went through an ordeal with medicine and stuff like that. But the bicycle helped me more than anything else. So what I would do is just get up and ride, no matter what time it was. So now I find myself, if I can't sleep, I'll get up, and my day sometimes starts at 2:30, 3 o'clock, and I'll go down to the lake, and I'll ride laps, and I'll be back in time to take my daughter to school, and it's a great start to the day.
So you were there, it was before dawn, and you were on Park Lane, and
yeah.
I guess you don't remember too much about what happened.
Well, I remember this one pretty clearly, actually. I don't often ride my bicycle down there. I did have a slightly later start on this morning than I'd wanted. You know, I usually try to get back before there's really any traffic at all. But I'd come across Park. I'd crossed Greenville. There is a right turn sort of feeder lane that where it's it turns into three lanes when you make a right on Park, heading towards 75 from Greenville. As a cyclist, I know better than to veer into that lane and then try to blend back in. So I just held my line, you know, in the what was the inside lane? It's two lanes on the other side. And then just past the Dart rail station, when it blends into two lanes again, about 40 or 50 yards farther up the road, a pickup truck, the wing mirror just missed me, but he was towing an irrigation trailer, which is a good deal wider than the pickup truck. Now, and it was just flat out no place to be trying to overtake a cyclist because, cyclists make the mistake sometimes of, trying to be polite and hugging the side of the road when, in fact, we're entitled to the entire lane. Had I been occupying the entire lane, the gentleman would have had no opportunity to pass me. And that morning I would have been safe. I was about a mile from home at the time. But because I was hugging the right-hand side, he decided he would take a shot at it. And rather than hit the car on his left, he hit the cyclist on his right.
And when you were down, he gets out of his truck and says, well, this guy was in the road.
Yeah, yeah. And fortunately, there was a lady who was a witness to the whole thing who dialed 911, and we got emergency services there quickly. They were fantastic. And I didn't really know, how badly I was injured at the time. I knew it wasn't good. I'd fallen from my bike, from you know, at several occasions that'll happen if you ride a road bike. You know, you'll slip or whatever, but it's this was different. You know, a very being hit by several tons of fast-moving metal from behind, you know, and I heard the transmission change too, which wasn't a good thing, you know, where he dropped a gear to try to get past. And, you know, I got hit in the back and on the head and did some kind of a somersault, whatever, landed, and then he ran over me. Over the left side of my body, my shoulder got crushed, and particularly my left elbow. I broke a few ribs and punctured a lung. So I remained conscious because this lady, you know, I remember the coolness of her hands on the back of my neck, and she said, "Don't worry, you know, the police are coming, you know, ambulance is coming." And I just have vague memories of the gentleman coming back, and he was, you know, just apparently his. "I was in the road," was his reply when she said, "You just ran over him."
So, did he pay your medical bills?
No. Just nothing like that happens. There's, you know, there's a court thing going. I can't really talk too much about it at the minute, but it was months of nightmarish treatment. You know, I was in danger of losing my left arm at one stage, and had to wear a wound vacuum. Be in a hyperbaric chamber, you know, where they put you in scrubs and put a seal around your neck and a plastic hood over the top, and they feed you pure oxygen to try and oxygenate the blood more. And any kind of a crush wound, you know, if you're going to have a wound, you'd much rather have a break. You'd much rather have 10 breaks than one crush, and because it's the injury is only inside. So the lymphatic system and the nervous system, I still have no feeling in my left elbow. You could take the cigarette lighter to it and put on fire. That's, you know, all gone. But I do have pretty good use of my left arm. You know, there's no ticket given. There was no the police actually marked the accident in the wrong spot. You know, I mean, and they were the ones who picked me up off the ground. You would think they would maybe get that right. There were a lot of things that just seemed wrong about the entire incident.
So, as you mentioned earlier, cyclists have a right to be in the center of a lane on a city street. Of course,
yes.
You can't go on the freeway, but on a city street. Do you think, though, that there's a bias by police against cyclists?
Well, no, I think there's unquestionably a bias against cyclists, not just from the police, but, you know, they're viewed as a nuisance in a lot of ways. And if a cyclist is taking up an entire lane, you know, which is something that you wouldn't normally do, it's only in a dangerous situation where you feel like you might be overtaken that, and you get a lot of people out on group rides where some problems will happen. And cyclists are at fault here as well, where they'll, you know, feel like they own the road. This is about sharing the road and understanding the rules and understanding the law. And the law provides cyclists with exactly the same protection as it does motorists.
And as I understand it, there are people who say, well, cyclists should be on the sidewalk. That's illegal, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure that it's illegal, but I know that it's very unwise. Anyone on a bicycle, if you've been on a sidewalk in Dallas recently, that's a pretty rough spot to ride. Most of them are. There's some big cracks, holes, and ways to, you know, come off sideways. Fairly recently, they tried to pass a bill in the Texas legislature that would give cyclists 3 feet of room, that you would have to have 3 feet in order to pass a cyclist. And you as a cyclist know that 3 feet is nothing. If a car goes past you at 50 miles an hour, especially on a road bicycle where, you know, the tire is usually less than an inch in diameter, you hit any kind of a crack or a seam or a gutter, anything like that, the turbulence from a car going past at that speed is enough to bring you down and probably into the path of following traffic. So, I mean, there's a balance where, you know, drivers you know, have to be more patient. And this is not just with cyclists. This is just in general. If you watch in a school zone in the mornings when parents have dropped their children off, you know, their behavior before and after is entirely different. You know, and they're inattentive. And Dallas isn't the worst when it comes to that. I think Houston might be, you know, from my own experience in terms of, you know, drivers. But Dallas is the third worst city in the United States in which to ride a bicycle. Fatalities and accidents are the third worst. And there are good cities. New York, surprisingly enough, is very progressive when it comes to providing access to roads for cyclists. And Portland, Oregon, I think, is number one. They provide bike boxes, painted zones at dangerous intersections in which cyclists can stop and have a safe place to take off from. There are so many advantages, you know, to getting on a bicycle. As you said earlier, cardiovascular or whatever. Imagine how the healthcare costs in this country would come down if people actually got out from behind the wheel. And the great irony to me, having been through this ordeal, and I got hit again in Detroit.
Just a couple of months ago, right?
Yeah, this is maybe about 6 weeks ago. And I have no recollection at all of this accident. I just got hit from behind again. I'd been in a park. I was about 800 yards from my hotel on a fairly quiet road. It had started to rain, and the next thing I knew, I woke up in hospital, and Jim Nance is staring at me. Hello, friends. It was a fairly horrifying experience. I have no recollection of that at all. It's a question of just finding a balance. You know, we need to share the road. We need to be a little more patient. And, I hear cyclists all the time apologizing for, other cyclist behavior. Well, we know, and I've seen the police ticketing cyclists down at White Rock Lake, for rolling through a stop sign at a walking pace. Yeah, and this was shortly after 8 cyclists were killed in a space, or were hit, rather, 3 of them were killed in a space of 11 days in June. And this was the reaction, was to ticket cyclists. I've seen people walk through a stop sign at that. I don't know if the police are afraid that, they might, a cyclist might dent up a cruiser or something like that. But, no cyclist ever killed anybody by, going through a stop sign at that pace. So just the reaction and the general level of tolerance for people on a bicycle, it seems like their lives are worth less for some reason.
David Faraday is my guest. He's a golf analyst for CBS Sports. His article, Crash Test Dummy, tells of his experience being hit by a pickup driver from behind. It's available in the October issue of D Magazine. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372. Are there places, David, that you won't go on your bike?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I have a very specific route. If I do ride on the street, I try to be very careful about where I go. The place that I got hit was somewhere that I try to ride in very quiet times. I had a puncture on this particular day and was about 30 minutes later than I wanted to be. And I knew there was going to be traffic. I figured that, I'll hug the curb and, be polite and do the right thing and it'll be fine.
And you did have lights on your bike.
Oh. Anyone who would hit me in the dark has a grievance against Christmas trees. you can see me from miles away.
Now, I know that you've got kids as well. Do you ride with them?
I ride with my daughter, yep, and occasionally with my stepson.
And do you have special rules for them? Or I have to imagine. When I'm with my kids, I just panic the whole time.
Well, absolutely. And the one thing that I do agree with here is the helmet law that we have here in the city of Dallas. You have to wear a helmet when you ride a bicycle. Now, in Texas, the state law, you can ride a motorcycle without one. And if you're that big an idiot, carry on. But emergency room doctors and nurses call them donor cyclists. Hmm. That's unfortunately is the case. Riding a motorcycle without a helmet is just insanity. But, on a bicycle, you have to wear a bicycle helmet, and that's a good thing. And I don't let my daughter on a skateboard without one.
David Faraday is here. He's a golf analyst for CBS Sports and author of the article Crashed Test Dummy, which appears in the current issue of D Magazine. We'll be back in just a minute and start taking your calls. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also reach us via email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, and history start weekly, a part of SMU continuing and professional education. Details online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking today about bicycle safety, cyclist rights and responsibilities, and those of motorists with Dave Faraday. He is a golf analyst, David Faraday, rather, for CBS Sports. He wrote a piece called Crash Test Dummy in the October issue of D Magazine. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or emailing think@kera.org. I guess it's appropriate for Texas, but the discussion about laws plays out in many ways like the gun control issue. Some people say everything would be fine if we just enforced the laws we already have, and other people say, no, we really need some new statutes. Where do you fall?
Well, I think everything would be fine, you know, if you know, cyclists were afforded the same courtesies that even, you know, the small courtesies the drivers give each other, and those aren't great. You know, I mean, but you don't, you know, drive into them just because they're there. And, you know, this most recent incident, while, you know, no one hits anyone on purpose, you'd like to think that. You know, if the sun is in your eyes, it really, you know, you should really drive in a way that takes that into consideration a lot slower and be careful and try to see what's in front of you, maybe wear sunglasses, whatever. I think, you know, the laws that we have, you know, are mostly adequate. You know, we do have the same rights, but, you know, it's not applied that way. You know, it's not looked on in that regard. And certainly, you know, the legislature down in Austin, you know, the great irony is, you know, many cyclists are out there riding to support causes, you know, the Race for the Cure or whatever, you know, the diseases, to cure diseases that many motorists will get simply because they drive everywhere.
They're not exercising.
That's right. You know, and, you know, for drivers to be as angry as they are, because cyclists infuriate motorists. I've had cans thrown at me. I've been spat at. I've been driven off the road deliberately on occasions.
It's funny because it's usually not more than 30 seconds that people have to wait behind you if they happen to be in a place where they can't pass.
No, that's true. Yeah, I mean, you just slow down and, you know, but then you get the person behind them gets angry because they've slowed, because they've shown some decency. And it's almost like when you leave, you know, 2 or 3 seconds between yourself and the car in front of you when you're on the interstate, you know, some idiot will, you know, jump in front of you and make it a second and a half. You know, I mean, you're trying to do the right thing, but somebody else will, you know, they'll sabotage it. It's almost the same way. You know, if someone does try to do the right thing with the cyclist on the road, you'll get another. I've seen motorists overtake cars that are being polite to cyclists. And for the most part, you know, cyclists will try to keep out of the way as well.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Colin in Lakewood. Hey, Colin.
Hello, Chris. Hello, David.
Hey, Thank Colin.
You so much for this. Well, I must say, David, I'm glad you're with us because I, too, have had the same type of what I would call arrogant behavior from those behind the wheel. And really, I think from my standpoint, having been born and raised in England, don't hold that against me, is that it's down to education. There's very little of it over here in regards to what I'm used to in Europe, getting your driver's test, getting your renewal, even in schools, and actually having to pass a bicycle test.
Yeah.
So that would be very beneficial from the standpoint of those riding the bicycles and also from the community at large getting a clear understanding that, yes, they do have legal means to be on that road. And let me share with you, I do believe that riding in Dallas, I've been here for 30 years, is truly almost a death wish. I have been fearful of riding on the roads here. I ride my mountain bike all the time. I ride around White Rock Lake all the time. I live over here.
Yeah.
And I was on Williamson Road, you may know it.
I do.
Curvy little street, 7 a.m., and I hadn't turned onto it but for 10 seconds when I had a car honking its horn at me and trying to run me off the road.
Well, it's someone that hasn't been to Starbucks yet.
Yeah, and then that's funny you say that because here comes the clincher here. Then the car behind them, as they go by cursing me, the car behind them also does the same. Now we have basically mob mentality. I have three cars shouting at me to get off the road. And you're absolutely right. That's so funny you say that because it was about, 2 hours later at Einstein Bagels, there's the woman in the car getting her coffee.
Wow.
Totally different person. But behind the wheel, for whatever reason, I seem as a nuisance simply because I'm out there getting my exercise and taking up a few yards and a few minutes of their time.
Yeah, it is. It's a shame. And, I mean, I'm sure you're a nuisance, Colin, but for very different reasons than that. It's a cultural difference, as you say. You know, in Europe, if you look at, just take France as an example, which is the perfect country to ride a bicycle, or Holland, where they have that bicycle culture. where Lance Armstrong, you know, won the Tour de France 7 times in a row. And it's been 29 years since they've had a Frenchman win it. And then when they finally get rid of Lance, they get Floyd Landis, you know, another American. They were going to find him positive, you know, on something, trust me. But there is that, you know, the bicycle is a much more revered form of travel over there. And there's a whole culture around it here, you know, in the United States in general, and especially in Texas. This is a truck culture. This is a big, wide open space, you know, kind of a, you know, we're driving our cars here. And there is a difference there that, you know, the cultural gap is just huge.
We have an email from Art in Fort Worth who says he loved the article and appreciated your perspective on the issues. He's also an avid cyclist who's been hit, but he wasn't injured as badly. He says, what do you think we as cyclists are doing wrong and right in our driver awareness and PR efforts?
Well, I think at this point, you know, there are certain roads that we clearly shouldn't be on. I mean, we have the right to be on them. There's no question about that. But given the general attitude of motorists in this town, you know, until there are bike lanes, until perhaps, you know, a council member's or, a senator or a congressman's, you know, is flattened. I mean, I'm a kind of an F-list celebrity. I suggested in the piece, you know, if we get Tommy Lee Jones or Matthew McConaughey, if they get flattened, that would really help. I don't know how many people have to die until the attitude changes and we do get something done where, you know, we become progressive enough to start thinking about bike lanes and alternative modes of transport, people getting into work and feeling, you know, there was a book written by a Dr. John Rady called Spark, you know, the connection between exercise and the brain, where they did a study in an independent school district, I think it was somewhere in the Northeast, maybe Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, where they took one school and had the children exercise 45 minutes before classes. And their academic results were staggeringly different to any other school in the district. The percentage was enormous of you know, how much better they did. It's such an enormous advantage to the population of any city to have more and more people exercising, that, you know, the cultural differences and the, it's really, we need a paradigm shift here to just to help people see things differently.
You know, the shame of it is that the climate here most times of year is so great for riding.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if you can stand the heat a little bit, it's relatively flat and not that bad otherwise.
Yeah. And, you know, White Rock Lake is very, very important, an extremely important place. And they're working on the trail there where, you know, we won't have to be out on Lowther. There have been some horrifying accidents on Lowther where the speed limit is 20, 25 miles an hour as well. And you know, and a lot of cyclists will be doing close to that. So they're really not even in the way in terms of speed there for the most part. But a lot of people can't get their bike, you know, in their vehicle and take it somewhere so they can ride. You know, they have to, if they want to ride, they have to ride on and around city streets. So it's we have to get some legislation in here. We have to find someone, you know, in the city or in the state legislature, whatever it takes, you know, to understand the problem here.
David Faherty is my guest. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's go next to Mary in Dallas. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Good, yeah. I'm David, first of all, I'm very glad you're here.
Thank you, Mary.
I lost my sister to alcoholism, and it's a terrible thing to deal with, and I'm happy about your bike riding. I myself walk. I'm a walker.
Right.
And I have a little bit of a different perspective. I understand the whole being used as an obstacle course feeling, because when I walk at White Rock Lake, I feel that way. I feel like I am treated that way by the cyclist.
Yes.
And it's very, very frustrating. I've actually been run over by a cyclist at the lake, and I walk very early so I can get to work. And it's a frustrating thing. So I understand that, and what I would advocate for is some sort of community education on TV, you know, workshops, classes, whatever it takes, so that any driver, whether they're in a car, a motorcycle, a bicycle, whatever they're driving, that they understand, as you said, the space and passing requirements to be safe for whoever is sharing that roadway with them. And, you know, it's been a tremendously frustrating thing as just a person that walks. And I love biking. It's a great sport. And actually, I love, you know, motorcycling. But I do understand, you know, your frustration. But I've seen it from a different point of view.
I've seen that too, Mary. I've almost had collisions with walkers myself. Walkers without lights. I have to say, and that's a dangerous thing to do in the morning. You know, if you're going to be out there, you need to wear something reflective and or carry a light or both, preferably. But, you know, you walk on the right and you pass on the left, and those are the rules. If everyone follows them, you know, then it works fine. But you'll get cyclists who are going too fast, and you'll get walkers who are going in the wrong direction and on the wrong side of the road and all over the road. Again, it's about education, as Mary says. You know, everyone needs to know the rules.
There's kind of a cultural battle at the lake and at the Katy Trail, certainly. There's,
yes.
You're one or the other, it seems like. And people, it's just maybe a call for civility, that everybody needs to slow down and chill out a little bit.
Yeah, really. Slowing down is the key. I think everyone's in such a hurry to get everywhere. There's a lot of pressure. You know, our kids have after-school activities, and you get, soccer moms and dads and carpool moms and dads, you know, that have things to do afterward that are always in a hurry to get anywhere, especially, it seems, you know, early in the morning. I will ride White Rock Lake, and where the only thing that I see, I've seen bobcats out there. I've seen owls take possums off the road in front of me. The advantage of being a night owl is just some of the amazing things that live in suburban Dallas. Foxes and coyotes out there. The other day, I thought, you know, I was back on drugs again. I saw an armadillo with a duck in its mouth, and I actually had to stop and turn the bike around and actually put my headlamp on it to make sure that, you know, all right, what did I do this morning?
Are they carnivores?
I'm not sure. I know they eat insects, but why would have a duck? I mean, clearly something else had killed the duck. An armadillo doesn't go duck hunting, the last time I checked. But, you know, that's actually what it was. And the things that I've seen early in the morning at the lake, I mean, it makes it all worthwhile.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Gary in Dallas. Hey, Gary.
Hi. It's a great program, and I agree with most of the things that your speaker is saying, or your guest is saying. I do take issue with the one fact that he seemed incredulous that the cyclist was ticketed for coasting on the stop sign or running past the stop sign. And if the laws apply to everybody, it applies to cyclists, too. And he was saying he's never seen a cyclist run into somebody and cause damage like that. Well, a cyclist could certainly cause somebody to damage themselves by either hitting him and having the guilt of that, or hitting another car by swerving out of the way of a cyclist. So I think it's a matter of consideration for everybody. People that don't have consideration of cyclists, other motorists that don't have consideration for other motorists, it seems to run the whole gambit. They're not considerate of anybody anywhere. But everybody should be aware of all the other people on the road, and the laws actually should apply equally to those.
Gary, thanks for your call. Sounds like a fair point.
Yeah, no, it is a fair point. And, but I'm not talking about a cyclist coasting through a stop sign. I'm talking about somebody who almost comes to a track stop, what we would call a track stop, you know, and looks both ways and goes through. I mean, a gentleman, you know, an elderly gentleman with a walker could go through at the same pace. You know, this is not going to do any damage. You know, it's people sometimes get ticketed for not coming to a complete stop in a car, you know, where, you know, the officer will look for the front end of the car to go down, you know, and then start again. You know, that's, again, the absolute application of the law. There's no question about that. The incident I was talking about, you know, no one should have been ticketed. But I agree, of course, cyclists shouldn't coast through a stop sign. That goes without saying.
Billy Indicator writes, traffic judges and police need to ride bicycles on the streets as part of their training. If they haven't, their job training is incomplete.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go out there and take a shot at it, see what it's like. You know, that's the one thing that, you know, and if I hit a cyclist, on the way home from having done this show, you know, that wouldn't be good, obviously. But I'm a lot more careful about especially around, you know, school zones and, in suburban areas where I know to expect to see cyclists. You know, and I give them a very, very wide berth, because I am a cyclist.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Helen in Dallas. Hello, Helen.
Hello. I have a little different view on this.
Okay.
I don't think one law should apply for cars and bicycles. I'm sorry that you've been hurt in riding your bicycle.
Oh, thank you.
But anyone who rides a bicycle, and I ride a bicycle, but anyone who rides a bicycle, a motorcycle, or extremely small car, we have to realize that if we do this and we're hit by a car, we're the ones to be hurt, not the person in the car. So I feel I don't have a thing to complain about if I'm hit while riding a bicycle.
Oh, my goodness, really?
When people are having to spend so much time on the road trying to get to work, they're anxious, frustrated, having to slow down to the speed of a bicycle, I don't think it's fair at all. I'd like to use a golf cart to go to the grocery store and to school, but that's not legal. And that'd go the same speed as a bicycle.
Well, you know, no, it's not legal, you know, but you could walk, and, you know, you'd be taking even more of a risk, you know, with that line of argument. You know, if you're crossing the road, you know, is it okay if the sun is in somebody's eyes, if they just mowed you down?
I hope that Helen stays safe if she is out there on her bike. We have an email from Althea who says, I admire bicycle riders and don't endanger them, but I would have more respect for them personally if they would respect the road rules. Around here, cyclists don't seem to believe that stop signs and lights apply to them. I have to say, I see that a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see it too, you know, where, you know, you'll see a cyclist that, but you do see the same thing with pedestrians. You know, you'll see a pedestrian that, you know, will be at, you know, there's a little red man up there, you know, whatever, but there's no cars coming and they're going to cross
against the light. Yeah.
Against the light. Like a cyclist will do that as well. You know, again, you know, there has to be some kind of a line drawn where there is sensible behavior and there's behavior that's just flat out dangerous. And it's the dangerous stuff that we need to get rid of.
David Faraday is my guest. He is a golf analyst for CBS Sports. He's written an article in the current issue of D Magazine called Crash Test Dummy. We'll resume our conversation in a moment. You can send an email to join us to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, and history start weekly, a part of SMU continuing and professional education. Details online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is David Faraday. He wrote a piece in the current issue of D Magazine called Crash Test Dummy. It's about his experiences being hit while cycling on Park Lane in Dallas. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org. Kendall, who is a KERA member, says, as a cyclist who's logged 100,000 miles in nearly 30 years of riding,
wow.
Your guest is right on. Motorists, as a rule, have left their brains in neutral when they put their car in gear. Yet motorists, I try to claim the lane when it's the best defense and will move to the left at an intersection to allow a light on red. Yet motorists will hang back and not turn, not allowing the traffic behind to continue or turn. One great benefit to $4 a gallon gas is fewer 9-foot-wide Hummers on 8-foot-wide lanes.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is a good point brought up there. You know, when you do get to an intersection, you know, a cyclist moves to the left-hand side of the inside lane to allow cars to make a right turn, because if that cyclist stays on the inside of the lane when the light turns green, you've got cars that want to make a right behind you, you know, but you're going straight on. You take your life in your hands. But all of a sudden you end up, you know, as you go across, you know, there may be a car in that inside lane that wants to go straight ahead, but you're now on the car's left as you go through the intersection. You know, that car needs to realize that you need a little time to get back over because you've been polite. You know, you're allowing people who may be behind you that want to make that legal right turn. You know, there are so many sort of little nuances here. And again, one of our listeners earlier on said that they felt that there should be some sort of a public education thing, you know, perhaps... I don't know if the city could come up with, you know, certainly on public television, it would be nice to see. It'd be nice to see it on the networks, you know, just a little information, public service pieces, you know, on what's right and what's wrong, and you know, just slow down. That's the bottom line. Slow down. You don't need to go that fast.
The one thing we should say, and I'm sure you experience this all the time, there are people who are great, who are in their cars,
yes.
and they'll sort of make a point of doing things, and I always try to thank them for that.
But, yes, yes.
You know, you forget about everybody who does follow the rules and make it safe for everyone.
Yeah, and those people that are great, they're usually cyclists.
they
just happen to be driving at the time. Yeah,
yeah. Most of us are both, I guess.
Yeah.
We have an email from Bill in Dallas who says, are there any city council members who are more sympathetic to cyclists than others? Do you know the answer to that?
That's a good question. If there are, they're not very vocal about it. I believe there are some who are doing their best to get something done about this, this, which is an extremely serious problem. People are dying here at an unacceptable rate.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak to Al in Farmers Branch. Hey, Al.
Yes. I have a legitimate question to ask the riders. I like to ride a bike on a residential street, and I like to ride a bike on a bike trail. But I'm confused why the bicyclists demand, rudely and adamantly demand, that they have a right to the roadway that was designed for and paid for by cars. And every time I've asked a person that face-to-face, they've always gotten kind of rude and just never really told me why they were owed that right. You know, they don't pay gasoline taxes. They don't pay safety sticker. They don't pay registration. They don't wear seat belts or anything. They just demand the public roadway. And I'm just wondering what an answer would be for me.
Well, I think that the answer would be I know very few cyclists who don't drive also, and they do wear seatbelts, and they do pay their taxes, and they do pay for that road. They just happen to use the road with both a motor vehicle and a bicycle, and that's all. You know, I can't think of any of my friends that ride that don't also drive. So, I mean, the road is there to be shared. It's that simple.
We have an email from Mike who says, what can the city of Dallas do to get off the list of worst cycling cities in America?
Well, I think you've got to look at the more progressive cities like San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and New York City, which is a very good example of a city that has major problems. It's got an enormous traffic on the streets and yet still is one of the safer cities in which to ride a bicycle. Try and learn what you can from what they've done and do as much as you can in a similar fashion right here in Dallas.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Kevin in Falba. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I wish to offer my luck to David for his writing in the city. I'm lucky enough to live way out in the country for that reason.
That's great.
As well as good air. Now, listen, what I want to say is I hope all these bicyclists that are listening realize that it's foolish to be on their bikes without helmets.
Oh, yes.
The second point I want to make is I think, although it'll be a tough struggle to pass this along to the purse string holders, we need to have separate bicycle lanes somehow or another. There's all these public lands, parks, and whatever's BLM land and all that stuff, that maybe we could somehow get that idea passed. I can't ride on public roadways where there's very much traffic because I just don't like the oxygen level, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
I can understand that sentiment. You know, quite often I'll drive my bike out to Melissa there on 75 and just ride the service road up to Sherman and turn around and come back. You know, it's nice rolling hills. There's very little traffic and that sort of thing. But, to avoid any kind of city driving and, riding around the lake, I love. But, you do feel like a hamster in a wheel after a while. Sometimes, so it is nice to get out. And there is terrific riding here out in the country in Texas.
We have an email from Richard who says, you're a cyclist, take the lane. Roads were meant to transport people and goods, not vehicles. And he also points out the Cycling Center of Dallas has just opened at the Jewish Community Center on North Haven, and they will be teaching regular cycling classes starting
in
the new year. Yeah.
And I'm delighted to hear that. Yeah, and I understand exactly, take the lane. And I have done that. You know, you get run over by a car a couple of times. You know, the second time it starts to seem less like an accident. And as I said in the piece, you know, I'm actually considering buying a tandem and hiring a small person for a tail gunner.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Stephen in Frisco. Hi, Stephen.
Hello. I have a comment regarding, well, it was going to be a comment regarding some of the bicycling habits. However, I think enough of that has been thrown out there. So I think a lot of this really, the problem originates with what is a bicycle for? And by that I mean we've got cars that you can pretty much guarantee are for getting from point A to point B for traveling quickly and in comfort. And a bicycle, many people such as yourself may view it as that, but many other people view it as a piece of exercise equipment or something for recreation. So on a road, is it fair to view it as having being part of that spectrum of inline skates, potentially a skateboard, a bicycle, is a recreational thing with wheels that you're putting on a public roadway and thereby putting yourself in danger and other people?
So hang on 1 second, Stephen. I want to get an answer for you, but I want to clarify. So you feel like if people need a bike for transportation, it's okay for them to be on the road, but if they're out just to get exercise, they should do that elsewhere?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm all in favor of biking. I should bike more. I need to lose weight. But by the same token, I think that's where part of the problem comes in with the drivers is they're looking at this and they don't view a bicycle as being a means of transportation so much as something for exercise, entertainment, and why are you exercising and entertaining yourself on my roadway where I'm trying to get somewhere?
Right. Well, first of all, it's not your roadway. It's our roadway. And yeah, you're ignoring the law. I don't know what the law is for a skateboarder or an inline skater or anything like that, but the law says that a cyclist has exactly the same privileges and rights as a driver does. So, I mean, that's a moot point to me. You know, we do have the right to use the road. The law says we have the right to use the road. Unfortunately, the law is not being applied.
Let's go next to Bob in Dallas. Hello, Bob.
Hello, this is Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, I'm a cyclist, and I started commuting to work about 3 days a week about 5 years ago. And, you know, people that are talking about bikes are not transportation or bikes aren't supposed to be on the road, I, you know, agree with your guest that the law says a bike is a legal transportation on a road. And drivers just need to realize this. You know, most of the times if we're on the road, we get caught in, surrounded by cars for just seconds. And if they would just be careful and pass us, they're not going to be delayed that much. Most of my time on the road, I'm the only one on the road because the cars go in packs. And, you know, I hadn't had an accident with a car yet, fortunately. And, I hope I never do. I've had accidents, but they're,
yeah,
really things that I did or fell.
Self-inflicted, yeah, I understand that one.
Yeah. And really, drivers need to be encouraged. Police need to be encouraged. Everyone needs to be encouraged to accept this because there's going to be more and more people. There's more people in our office building that are starting to ride bikes to work. And, you know, there's the poor that don't have a choice. There's a lot of those, and they're invisible, and people don't see them unless you're out on a bike riding along with them.
Well, Bob, those are all good points. And maybe, David, it takes critical mass. Maybe it takes a certain percentage of the population riding on a regular basis for this to turn around.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe there'll be a tipping point where, you know, there will be a cultural change in the way people see bicycles. I certainly hope so. I know it'll be – I love this country, and I love Texas in particular. It would be great to see more and more people out on bicycles on the roads. Healthcare costs come down. You know, our children become thinner and more intelligent as a result, because that is that's the net result of riding a bicycle. It's like being a kid again. And, you know, we look at our children. We want them to be safe. You know, everyone on a bicycle is somebody's baby.
Well, and it's also that much less traffic out there, car traffic.
Well, that's right.
Let's take one more call, and that comes from Valentine in Fort Worth. Hi, Valentine.
Hi. Yeah, my comment is, you know, I'm a cyclist, both a racing cyclist, also a commuter. I commute about, I commute from Southwest Fort Worth to Grand Prairie. Part of that, I ride the TRX mean, some days I ride the bike the whole way. So, you know,
good
those
for you.
Viewers who, those viewers who think it's not a means of transportation, it absolutely is a means of transportation. You know, my commute is 20 miles each direction. If I take the train, if I ride the whole way, it's 35. So it's a good long way. But anyway, I'm also a racer. And part, you know, I see some different, and along with that, I'm also a runner. I've done, you know, a few marathon running as well.
I definitely want to hear you, Valentine, but we're running out of time. So if you could ask your question or make your point.
Okay, so is that the cyclists aren't always earning their responsibilities. In other words, the commuter might be out there following the law and following the rules of the road, but you get that group mentality whenever they get together and they're blowing through red lights and they're, you know, they're racing, and they're not really earning their respect. And then to the comment of the walker, I also commute before daylight, and so I'm out on a multi-use trail trying to be respectful with my headlight on, and I can't see the walkers. They think they're out there safe because there's no cars, and they're really causing a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got a good point there, you know, with both with the walkers. I mean, if you're out walking in the dark, you need to be wearing reflective clothing, even if you're on a walking and biking trail, because it's extremely dangerous. A biker can be doing 20 miles an hour and not see you until, you know, he's 20 feet from you. You know, you do get bikers also when they get into that pack mentality, when you get group rides. I think that's when a lot of the problems occur, where, you know, you get the swarm of riders out there that just behave, you know, in a boorish manner. And I hate to see that.
I don't mean to tease David, but he thought that he was coming on the TV version of the show instead of radio. You brought with you a visual aid. But let's talk about this for a second. You brought a tire. Not all bikes are like this. I have a big grandma bike, but this has very thin. Can you describe that tire for
me? Well, it's an Easton climbing rim I brought with me, and the tire is a 21 millimeter. I think a lot of people don't understand the physics of a road bicycle, certainly. You know, I mean, they're more familiar with the mountain bike, you know, the big knobbly tire. That's a 21 millimeter tire, and for a road biker to keep in a straight line is really not that easy. You see, you know, pace lines and in the Tour de France and in pro racers, those are seriously talented athletes. For someone like me, you know, who's just a keen, you know, a recreational cyclist, you know, hitting a seam in the concrete or that spot where the asphalt stops and you get the cement between there and the curb, you know, coming down an inch and a half or something like that, that can be a dangerous spot where, you know, when you're on a tire that thin, you really need to be careful you know, you need a little space around you in order to be safe.
Well, we certainly wish you luck and health. Thanks so much for coming in.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
David Faraday is a golf analyst for CBS Sports and a former pro golfer. His article, Crash Test Dummy, can be found in the October issue of D Magazine. My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.